Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, I'm airing one of my favorite speeches I gave very recently about fighting in our country, what you can do to make a difference. It was at my friend Pastor Ken Graves' church in Maine. You're going to love it. If you guys want to support our program, charliekirk.com/support. We are traveling to new states every day, working harder than any other team out there. Two podcasts a day. Keep the socialists away. Email us, freedom@charliekirk.com. Support us at charliekirk.com/support. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Whether you're working from home or working on your fitness, you want to know what you're listening to actually be what you're listening to. Everyone needs a good pair of wireless earbuds, but before you drop hundreds of thousands of dollars on a pair, check out our wireless earbuds from Raycon. You already know that Raycon earbuds start about half the price of any other premium wireless earbuds on the market, and that they sound just as amazing as the other top audio brands that you know. Their newest model, the Everyday E25 earbud, are the best ones yet. With 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, and more compact design that gives you a nice noise-isolating fit. Unlike some of the other wireless options, Raycon earbuds are both stylish and discreet with no dangling wires or stems to distract anyone during video calls. Now's the time to get the latest and greatest from Raycon. Get 15% off your order. Buy Raycon.com/Kirk. They're terrific. You guys are going to love these earpods. 15% off at buyraycon.com/Kirk. Buyraycon.com/Kirk. I'm honored to be here, so I'll give you an update. My very good friend and my pastor, the person who I really have gotten to know Ken because of, Pastor Rob McCoy. He is fighting the battle right now in Thousand Oaks. Update from last service. A criminal restraining order was put against his church for gathering this week, despite no virus cases, socially distanced service, and the cannabis distributor, the strip clubs, and the liquor stores are open. And he says, why can't we have church? They went after him. They're threatening arrest. And he's defying it. And I think they're going to have like 12,000 people show up in their little 600-person church. So it's pretty amazing. We'll keep you updated on that. So praise God. Pretty awesome. So for those of you that have no idea who I am, I'm born and raised from Chicago, Illinois. The fun thing about being from Illinois is we have term limits in Illinois. It's a little different than in Maine. See, in Illinois, it's one term in office, one term in jail. So when we ask for our governor's cell number, we actually mean his cell number. I could keep going with Illinois, Chicago jokes. I spend some summers here in Maine for a couple weeks, and I love it here. It's spectacular. So it's such an honor to be in front of all of you and to be able to communicate kind of what I do. So I visit college campuses. I organize them. Turning Point USA, we're on over 2,000 high school and college campuses across the country. I've spoke at some of the most adversarial, most difficult campuses imaginable, from Brown University to UC Berkeley to Stanford to Harvard to Yale, and I've lived to tell about it. And I'm unafraid to say that God is real. I'm unafraid to say that our country is actually a gift from the generations that preceded us. We have to understand how this country was built. And I think that we're really losing that in our country in a lot of different ways. And so when I travel these campuses and I get booed at and I get screamed at, I actually know that I'm probably going in the right direction at that moment. You know, when you come up against that kind of fierce antagonism from the secular, atheist, very bitter community, you're like, I must be doing something right if they are really coming after me that aggressively. And that's not always the case. That's not always a great rule of thumb. But it is when you go to a college campus, I'll tell you that much. So I want to touch on a couple things and kind of complete the picture here. But I will kind of reiterate something I mentioned in the first couple services, which is we really are in a spiritual battle in this country. And there's now a public referendum that is very scary, where we have now prioritized through our laws that what we are doing right now is actually illegal. And the United States Supreme Court, it is said it's illegal under federal law for more than 50 people to gather at church. And they said that, John Roberts said that last Friday, week and a half ago, where Calvary Chapel, Las Vegas, was sued. And they said, why is that Caesar's Palace can remain open, a casino, and be at 50% capacity, but we can't? And they lost, incredibly, 5-4. Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, Alito, and Thomas ruled correctly, and the other five justices ruled incorrectly. Roberts, Sotomayor, Kagan, Ginsburg, and Breyer, the 5-4 decision. Incredibly, stunning decision, where basically the decision was, if you're a casino, if you're a cannabis distributor, if you're a strip club, if you're Walmart, if you're Home Depot, you are essential, but a church, sit and obey, no more than 50 people. And to be consistent, if you're saying it's about public health, then all mass gatherings should be held accountably similar, right? Especially the 250,000 people that were in Boston, on the streets of Boston in early June, or the 500,000 people in the streets of New York. And so what we as Christians have just wanted is just a fair shake. Why is it that churches are treated so categorically different? And we're seeing this across the country, and what we have basically seen is an admission from our governmental rulers is they believe that salvation is not essential and church is not essential. And boy, is there ever a time to stand up against that as clearly as possible as we as faith-filled people. Because the government will push us as far as we're willing to take it. And what Ken has done amazingly, and Ken's like, come on and arrest me. And I'm like, I don't think they will. And a lot of it is because they know that as soon as they start to overly criminalize Christianity, hopefully, I would hope there'd be a backlash. I'll tell you, though, from inside their circles, and I read a lot of their internal writings and things that have been leaked, they can't believe how little backlash there has been, just so you know. They have not been able to believe how weak American Christians have become. And this, they've basically said that. They thought that they would not be able to shut down the church on Easter, but they were. And think about it. It's the most holy day on our calendar. More people come to Christ on Easter Sunday. They come in for once a year, and hopefully they hear the word of God for the first time or the first time in a long time. And that was just basically robbed of us. 20 million people were not able to go to Easter. And some people say, well, we have it on a live stream, and that's fine. Hi, everybody watching on the live stream, and that's a perfectly acceptable, you know, method of communication. However, church is more than a YouTube channel. You know, church is a gathering of believers. It's ecclesia. It is believers helping people. I might be having trouble at my job. I need advice. I need friendship. It's fellowship. It's all those different things. And it's more than just a digital online community or a Facebook group. It is the actual physical gathering of human beings. And that's not the case, unfortunately, today. And we're seeing that kind of conflicting worldviews come together. Why is this happening? Well, it's because some people in government and in leadership believe the church is a true obstacle to what they want to actually achieve. Is that the church is actually getting in the way of their power grab. You see, some people in the more atheist secular community in our country, they believe that the church is an impediment to the kind of country that they want to live in. And this is a very difficult conversation for some people to have, but it shouldn't be for us Christians because we know it. This was predicted. This was prophesied in the Bible, in the text, that we were going to come under great persecution. And we, for a couple centuries, quite honestly, the last 100 years especially, we Christians have actually had it pretty good in Christian historical terms. In Christian historical terms, we have it the best that Christians basically have ever had it. The early church was under severe persecution. Nero cutting Christians' heads off. The early church met in catacombs in Rome out of fear of persecution of governance. It wasn't until the conversion of Constantine, about 350 years after Christ, was Christianity even a normally accepted religion in the Mediterranean. It was a religion that was basically always being persecuted. It wasn't until Marcus Aurelius, the last good emperor of Rome, who was in a lot of different ways a misunderstood figure in the West, but also helped create a lot of what they call Stoic philosophy. He was actually a friend of Christians. And it wasn't until him was there actually some sort of normalcy of the expression of Christianity. There, the rule, not the exception, has been the martyrdom and the persecution of Christians across the planet. So we've grown kind of comfortable, haven't we? We can go to church. We know it's protected because of that beautiful document, the greatest political document ever written in the history of the world, the United States Constitution. We'll get into that. And now it's kind of all being put in jeopardy. And they do say it's because of public health, but if it is, then be consistent. than say it that 200,000 people that go to Boston and New York can't gather. Maybe we should live in a country where a weed distributorship isn't more important than a church.
With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models of cars, it's impossible to stock all the parts that you need. In a traditional chain storefront, why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning? And wait while the counter man orders the parts on his computer or chooses his only brand from the warehouse. I've been through this experience. It is the worst. One reason to repair and maintain your cars is to save money, but you have to do it correctly. That's why you guys need Rock Auto. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing the prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto part customers for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts. Make sure you tell them the Charlie Kirk Show sent you. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. I highly recommend Rock Auto. They are an awesome company. RockAuto.com. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much time for the same parts? Right now, RockAuto.com, amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts you'll ever need. RockAuto.com.
And so then we ask ourselves the question, what is the church actually there to do? And I've seen what this church has done. I've heard the stories. Drug recovery, opioid recovery, marriage counseling, helping people get through tough times. The church is actually a moral necessity for a civil society. But certain people don't want that to be the case. They want the government to replace that. What a dangerous path that is to get on. And so if they had a button to push and they could say they could close this church, they would absolutely press that button. What's interesting is that if we had the same button to eliminate atheists or secularists, we wouldn't push that button. Because we see those people as an opportunity, not as an obstacle. We see those people as a chance to be able to interface with them and bring them to eternity and bring truth to them. So as I'm tasked to go to college campuses, it's a very telling thing, because I could tell you exactly where the culture is going 5 years from now. So five years earlier, I would tell you that there was going to be a defund police movement, there was going to be an abolished prisons movement, and the war on Christianity would only intensify. People didn't believe me. People thought I was being alarmist. It's very simple. Whatever happens on college campuses will soon happen in your entire culture. What happens in college campuses will soon happen in the halls of Congress. And I saw the bitterness, the resentment, and the arrogance that people had towards Christianity. Where the biggest thing that happens when I go to college campus is the mockery that God might exist. They believe that man created God, not that God created man. They believe that atheism is the only true way to create a civil society or whatever society they want to create. And I could tell you right now, the way that culture is headed in the next 5 years, it's very troubling if we continue on these trends of what's happening on our university campuses. Because what ends up happening is you have these elite schools, mostly in the Northeast and out West, that are teaching ingratitude for the nation that we live in. They don't teach that the Constitution is actually the greatest political document ever written that allows for the free expression of religion, the free expression of ideas, regardless of your faith or any faith at all whatsoever. Instead, they say that the Constitution is an oppressive document that must be eliminated and we must start over. And so this is the idea of postmodernism. I talked about this in the first service, but if you don't know what postmodernism is, I'll give you a quick download and then I encourage you to find out, because every one of your kids is learning it. Every single one of your kids, either through Snapchat, TikTok, delete TikTok, by the way, for all you young people out there. It's awful. And China's spying on you. So it's get rid of it. TikTok, Snapchat, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Hulu, Netflix. These ideas are being mass propagandized to you. First belief, there is no God. Get that out of your mind sphere. If you believe in God, it is inherently contradictory to postmodernism. This was theorized by two of the most unhappy philosophers. They're both French, go figure. Not that I have anything against the French, it's just not exactly the, let's say, the frontiersmen of philosophy. So they're striking out in my opinion. But these guys, Jacques Derrida and Michel Foucault. Okay, so this should all kind of make sense for you as it's kind of put together. They argued that there's no such thing as absolute truth. This was in the 60s and 70s. What does that really mean? There's no such thing as Jesus. That's what they're really saying. They're saying that there's no such thing as truth, that everyone has their own version of truth, and the only thing that exists in the world that is actually real is power. It's all they say. That everything that we do is nothing more than a power play. That's why they're so obsessed with power, when you think about it. Because that's the only thing that they can actually touch and they can understand is having power over another group. They look at everything through a lens of victims and oppressor. That's how they look through everything. That without us realizing it, the women in America are inherently oppressed by the patriarchy, that there's always a power system at play, and the only way to actually get rid of it is to blow up our entire civilization. Now, this might come to you as it might seem radical. This might seem unrealistic. No, this is mainstream ideology in every academy across the country. This is who publishes your newspapers. This is who teaches most of your kids. This is who creates your movies. These are the ideas that are expressed in every single vein. And they're all at odds and at spiritual war with the Bible and with the Word of God. Every single one of them. And so if you understand deeper what their true agenda is, there's a reason why they remove prayer in our schools. There's a reason why you cannot teach the Bible. Because as soon as you introduce the Bible to somebody's life, all of a sudden, the power play that might be underway might mean a lot less because someone might actually be able to find ultimate truth and a higher power. So these people are very much driven by resentment. They're driven by a bitterness that is within them, that we know this is a problem that because they don't have ultimate salvation. However, they will go their entire life trying to satisfy that kind of bitterness through earthly means, right? Trying to find it where they're never going to actually be able to find that kind of peace that we as Christians all have. Now, what's the significance of this is that if you allow this to go unchecked, which we have, an entire generation of young people will have no appreciation for the country that they're in, where 54% of my generation believes it's basically time to completely change Western civilization. So what is Western society anyway? Well, it's the Bible that built Western society. It's things that we take so much for granted, we don't even recognize them. We can say something that might be in disagreement with the majority opinion, and we can have that speech protected. That we can pursue our faith as we see fit. That you can own private property. The promise of civil society. The idea that your family, hopefully, will be able to have children that have a better life than you have. Hopefully. Now, a lot of that has been put in jeopardy in the last couple decades, and a lot of that has been, quite honestly, questioned by the elites and the ruling class in our country. So, we as Christians right now, I think that this is a huge deciding point for us. It's either going to be that we as Christians kind of want to be something like 4th-century monks, or we're going to be like the early church. It's kind of the way. We could be like 4th-century monks and go into the caves and never spread the gospel or good news or fight for civil society and just wait for the storm to pass. Or we can do what the Bible actually tells us to do, which is to go contest for truth in every single corner of civil society or uncivil society. As Paul said, contest for whatsoever is true. He says that in Philippians. Well, whatsoever is true is when people say something like, well, we should abolish police and we should abolish prisons. That's a very bad idea. And we should say it's a bad idea, and we should be unafraid to contest for that. The implementation of laws is exactly why we're able to have a civil society. To be able, God gave us the law for a reason, because not because he doesn't like us, he wasn't the fun police, but because he actually loved us. Because if you follow these rules, you'll actually live a more quiet and peaceable life, which is exactly what Paul tells us in 1 Timothy, one of the last things that Paul ever wrote. So the question for us Christians, and this is a very, some people say, you know what? I don't want to get involved in that. I don't want to get involved in government and politics. I think it's all messy, and I'm just going to kind of just go to church every Sunday. Okay. Well, first of all, if the messiness is an excuse, show me one thing that human beings operate in that isn't messy. Churches can be messy. Families, marriages, culture. I mean, the idea that it's kind of not exactly pure, I think is a very bad reason not to get involved in it. Some Christians say, I don't want to get involved in it because of an eschatological belief that Jesus is coming so soon. What's the point? You know, this is all just doomed. I think that is not theologically sound. I think we are called to spread our light in all corners, especially in civil society and even more so in governance. And I could tell you personally, I am not prepared to face my creator and not have a good reason when it is asked, hey, what'd you do about the 61 million abortions that happened since Roe versus Wade? Did you ever mention it? Did you speak out against it? Because that's one of the greatest innocent slaughters in the history of the planet. I'm not okay just saying I was okay with it and I didn't do something about it. We have 1 million abortions a year in this country. 1 million. And I speak out and I say we should have more compassion and love for women that have done that. But we should also be very clear that if there's anything for the church to get involved with, my goodness, is that not a moral yes or no issue? When people that have no voice at all whatsoever have their lives taken away from them. If there's ever a yes or no choice, that is one of them. And so I think that, and this is not the majority opinion, by the way, more pastors, Ken is the outlier, not the rule. More pastors are running to the hills away from these discussions than ever before. This is the Gideon's army moment, right? Where our forces are thinning and thinning and thinning. And if you remember the biblical story of Gideon's army, God thins the ranks and thins the ranks. And he thins it even more where he says, go drink from the river. And the people that either get on the knees or they drank like this, one of the two he sent home. So like 300 people left. And they ended up delivering and winning the battle, believe it or not. And I think he did that for a very important reason, so that the people who won the battle wouldn't give themselves the credit, but give God the credit. I think that's exactly what is happening now. In some ways, it's actually like a refiner's fire. This is actually a really refreshing moment. I'm actually more enthused that our ranks are shrinking than ever before. And it's really funny. I grew up in a couple Bible-based churches in Chicago, and I've followed some of these pastors. And I have a lot of respect for these guys, and I won't say any names. But there is one that he could not have been a more fire and brimstone preacher. He's perfectly theologically sound. I'd watch him on YouTube and I loved him. And he's like, when they come after us and it's the end times, our church will remain open and we are going to be preaching and we will not allow anyone to be affected. And I was like, I wonder how this guy is doing. And I go to his website. We are closed till December for a live stream. I'm like, okay. You know, and I was like, I remember the sermon when he was like, we are going to fight. Nothing can get past us. And you can know that our church is a place for it. And then he had this like, he's like, you know, we have to stay closed and all this. And okay. And I think that's actually really refreshing because words, actions, right? They must connect. And God bless Ken for his conviction to be able to do what he's doing. Seriously, you have a great leader here. You really do.
Computer systems in cars are the new normal. From electronically controlled transmissions to touchscreen displays to dozens of sensors. But you can't fix any of these new features yourself. So when something breaks, it could cost you a fortune. And now is not the time for expensive repairs. That's why I have CarShield. It's a terrific product. It's a terrific service. You're going to love it. Why? Because CarShield has affordable protection plans that can save you thousands for covered repair, including computers, GPS, electronics, and more. The people at CarShield understand payment flexibility is an absolute must. Monthly plans can be customized to your needs with rates as low as $99 a month. No long-term contracts or commitments. CarShield gives you options others won't. You get to choose your favorite mechanic or dealership to do the work, and CarShield takes care of the rest. They also offer complimentary 24/7 roadside assistance and a rental car while yours is being fixed. For as low as $99 a month, you can protect yourself from surprise and save thousands of dollars for a covered repair. Call 800-CAR-6000. And mention the code Kirk, K-I-R-K, or visit carshield.com and use the code Kirk and save 10%. That's carshield.com, code Kirk, a deductible may apply.
And it's not easy, and ridicule is a promise of Christianity. You know you're going to be mocked. You know you're going to be have things thrown at you. That is something we should embrace, actually. We should celebrate that. And I completely agree with Ken. There's this whole new thing that's happened in Christianity where it's like Christian Inc. almost, where there's a whole megaplex of the author speaker series. And I can say this as someone who's kind of an outsider. I'm not a pastor. I run an organization that does have a secular charter, but I'm a Bible-believing Christian. So I can kind of play in both spaces here. And I look at Christianity externally and kind of the whole the kind of complex that's been created. And generally, it's about meeting the budgetary needs and expanding to get the most amount of people in the biggest possible building and getting all these YouTube views and all those things. And I think some of them have good intentions. I really do. I think some of them say, hey, we can reach more people. We can multiply the gospel, do all these sorts of things. But Ken hit it exactly right. It's about create disciples of all nations. Well, discipleship is a long, drawn out process. You know, we call the 12 disciples of Jesus, we call them the disciples, but they didn't start that way. They started as followers, and Jesus poured into them over a long period of time before they were able to be called disciples, right? Through kind of discourse and dialogue and disagreement, then they were able to wear that banner and that kind of badge of discipleship. It's a long process. It's not just one YouTube video of 4.5 minutes, you know, of someone that's just saying, you know, with the lights behind them and all that stuff, that's kind of a feel-good gospel. And I'm not opposed to that theologically. What I am opposed to is when the church has become so absent from the culture that they exist in, and it gets even worse than that. When the church involves itself on the opposite insidious forces. So it'd be one thing if the church remained neutral during this in the last 8 weeks. That would be frustrating. So many churches, including Bible-believing churches all across the country, they have gotten actively involved in raising the money, activating their congregation, and mobilizing it towards things that are around destroying the nuclear family and destroying Western society. Active. Like, we have to go and march in the streets for this. And some of these pastors, and I follow some of them on Instagram, and yeah, they have 500,000 Instagram followers and all those sorts of things. They have never spoken out against on the issue of life. Ever. They've never spoken out about the persecution of the church. But the one time they decide to go mobilize is around a very deceptive movement that kind of came out in early June, that if you read the website, was about destroying the Western prescribed nuclear family, was around pitting people against each other based on their immutable characteristics, and quite honestly, was about disrupting the biblical worldview that we all have. I was like, that's what you get involved in? That's the moment you stand up? And I think almost all of this is rooted in bad theology. I really do. I think a lot of this is rooted in a poor understanding of the Bible, almost reading it the way you want to see it, and also not accepting some of the harder truths that are around it. I think additionally, you know, we have to be honest that Christianity should always be contesting for the most difficult cultural struggles. This is hard because we're always like, well, we don't know if we're going to win. Well, the victory here is actually completely irrelevant to whether or not you should get involved. In fact, I couldn't think of a more irrelevant reason not to get involved. Because we've already won. The battle's already over, right? That's why you guys are called Calvary Chapel, right? Because the victory was done on the Calvary. Like, literally. Like, that's already done. So we know how this whole thing plays out. Now, what are you going to do to contest for truth? And if my opinion, 61 million souls that are not breathing since 1972 or 1973, that's not good for anyone. It's not good for the gospel. It's not good for the kingdom. It's not good for our country. It's not good for civilization at all whatsoever. And so, yes, Christianity has grown in some metrics since the 1970s. Absolutely. But what kind of culture have we been able to pour into? Right? And that's an uncomfortable conversation for us, right? And so in some ways, it's been more about building bigger gathering sites, right? Big, all these, and not actually being able to contest for truth where it really matters. And so people ask me, they say, and I travel a lot. I'm speaking at a church next week. I spoke at Jack Hibbs last week. God bless Jack Hibbs, and he's phenomenal. There's so few good pastors out there. And Rob, I always go out of my way to make sure I mention them. Jack Hibbs and Ken Graves and Rob McCoy. And as I meet more, I'm going to add them to the list. But I get these messages from these pastors, and they're like, you're causing discord in the body of Christ, Charlie. You're causing upheaval. I mean, you wouldn't believe the messages I get. And I say, I'm causing discord. Like, you're the one that doesn't have your church open. Like, how am I the one causing discord? Anyway, what we really have here, though, more broadly, is, I think, a call to action for us Christians. I really do. And it's actually a really fun time if we embrace it. If you accept the suffering that will happen, the persecution that's inevitable, the backlash, but also the promise that this is what we're called to do, then this is the time to rise up. I can't think of a more exciting time to actually be a Christian. I can't. And now's the time to actually be able to contest in these very, people say divisive. Well, it's too divisive for me. I mean, your logo is literally a sword here, right? I mean, that's for a reason, right? It's supposed to be divisive. I mean, Christ had a message that can apply to all people, but he was very clear that not everyone was going to be able to go on that path. The door is narrow, right? I mean, it's a misapplication at times of, I think, American Christianity of that. So a couple things, kind of what we're going through more societally and more socially right now. I see a couple crises happening. I didn't talk about this as much in the first couple sermons, so I definitely want to get into it. There's a crisis of masculinity in our country. There is. There's a war on men, the likes of which we've never seen. And I am, of course, for strong men and strong women, but we have hyper-feminized America to a way that is so unbelievably dangerous, our society will cease to exist. Now, mind you, a country can get too masculine, too. It can. That's when you get strongman dictatorships that end up exploiting the power they get. So I'm not saying that society needs to be completely more masculine than feminine. I actually think it needs to be balanced, like a marriage where one becomes in flesh, where there are attributes that God gave the feminine and the masculine. I mean more archetypically here, and then I'll actually dive into the actual practice. But the masculine traits have been completely eradicated from our society. Young men are committing suicide in our country, the rates of which it should be the number one public health crisis in the country. More young men have committed suicide. That should just make us stop and say, what kind of country are we living in right now? Mind you, self-exiting from life should be, all death is a tragedy. But self-exit is something that should just make everyone just be very, I've lost friends to suicide, and it's very, very hard. And it's hard for the people around you. But we have to ask ourselves, why is this happening? And it happens for men and women, but it's almost 10 to 1 men to women. Okay, almost 10 to 1. And the reason is because from the time you're 7 years old in the public school system, young men, either consciously or subconsciously, are ridiculed and attacked for things they cannot control. The entire education system, first of all, is designed against the way that young boys actually are. They're hyperactive, they're hard to focus, and we say, go sit for 8 hours a day. That's like the stupidest idea we could possibly have, right? I know that from someone who's a little bit hyperactive, right? Just minorly. The school system is designed primarily for young girls. That's good. They actually flourish. That's why young girls since the 1980s have higher graduation rates, lower suicide rates. They earn more than young men up to the age of 30 till many of them decide to have children. They have more college degrees, more doctorates, more master's degrees, lower bankruptcy rates. I mean, every metric you can, young women are doing better than young men. That's not necessarily bad, by the way. I'm going to tell you kind of the implications of that. I'm not ridiculing it. I'm just saying the system works very well if young women apply themselves. They do. The issue is that, I'll get into the issue of that in a second. Let me pause that. But young men, in a lot of ways, especially in their developmental phases, ages 8, 9, and 10, the years that really matter, we have a school system that is not set up for them at all. Then you put into an entire culture of guilty until proven innocent, where 13, 14, and 15-year-olds, the messages I get of 14-year-olds that are being accused of things they did not do and being guilty until proven innocent is unbelievable. And then we have an entire, by the time young men get into high school, they get a hyper-feminized view of everything. And it really creates an imbalance in a very, very, I think, dangerous way. The number one complaint, we do a young women's leadership summit every single year. Our young women's leadership summit has 1,500 young women from across the country. The number one complaint I get is I cannot find strong men, honest men, men that have responsibility. And these are young women that have their act together. 22 years old, college graduates, first in their class, and they have all those things, but the thing they really, really want is a loyal spouse and someone that they're able to build a future with. It's a crisis. Then men say all the time, Charlie, my life has no meaning, I have no direction, and I don't know what to do. And I say, I know exactly why this is happening. It's because your entire life you've been taught a lie of self-esteem, not of self-control, and you have never been taught the necessity of responsibility. Men and women are different. Women, we actually give them a lot of responsibility. We do. The school system helps them reconcile with it. Men need a different type of responsibility than women, though. Men need adventure. It's very different, especially young men. 16, 17, and 18-year-olds need to feel as if they're on a path that has meaning. It's biblical. Abraham lived with his father till he was like 485 years old. You would know better than me. I'm somewhat exaggerating. But seriously, Abraham was kind of like a bum, right? And he was living with his father, and then God said, go on an adventure. It's biblical. All throughout the Old Testament, we see people living with their fathers, and then they send out and go, right? And with young men, we do the exact opposite. And we should release them into the world where we say, you have to become a tougher person to shoulder a burden, to protect the innocent, to build something meaningful. That is the masculine role. To go out into the forest and the woods that is dark, that is dangerous, deliver the goods and come back home. The woman is the protector, the nurturer. And I'm not supposed to be saying any of this because I get, you know, ridiculously attacked by the media, which is why I say it all the time. Because they say, oh, that's incorrect. And look, of course, there's exceptions to all of this. But we know these things to be generally true. Of course we do. It built our entire civilization, for goodness sakes. And you think we can disrupt that and things are just going to be okay? Of course not. I mean, I go to these campuses, they say there's no difference between men and women. That's what I hear. It's like there's no difference. I mean, that is such a perverted view of the world that you had to go to Brown University to believe something like that, that there's no difference between men and women, biologically or societally or whatever. And so for young men in particular, if we do not address this crisis of lack of masculinity, the entire culture will cease to exist. It will. And so What is the byproduct of it? This year, we are on pace to have 500,000 less babies than last year. 500,000. The 30-year-olds right now are the most unmarried generation in American history. Most unmarried. Highest suicide rate for young men are the ages 28 to 32. Highest addictions to everything imagined, from drugs to pornography to online video consumption. And yet, so these are the byproducts of it. And then you have the unhappiest female demographic in the history of the planet. You have very successful, corporate, aspirational, young 33-year-old women that can't find a spouse, or the spouse they do find is not exactly like Ken Graves. Let's just put it that way, okay? Not exactly the lumberjack that's going to protect the family, okay? And so then what ends up happening is the woman has to play the masculine. And that is not sustainable. And I understand it has to happen sometimes. I get it. I'm not attacking women that have to do this. I'm not. I'm talking generally socioeconomically and in a sociological way. It creates incredibly unstable families. And it creates children that do not have the right archetypes for aspiration. They do not. That balance and that role model. Children are way more smart, are way smarter than we give them credit for. Like, they're freaking unbelievably geniuses. Right? They are. And they are 18 months old and they're looking at their father and looking at their mother, 2 years old, and they're seeing what they want to become. Truly. And if they do not see that correctly in the archetypical fashion, well, that's when all of a sudden you start to see societal upheaval, where you have 500,000 less babies this year than last year. We're on the verge of a population collapse. People say overpopulation, not even close. We have young men that are 32 that are saying, I'm never going to get married. Millions of men. That's not, you can't sustain a civilization that way. And now it's spreading across the globe. And that's exactly why our biblical worldview is so comforting for us. And that's why we have to spread it, because you have miserable people that have been told nothing but do whatever you want to do whenever you want to do it. You're the most important person in the world. Where we have a book, the Word of God, 66 books that are all beautifully put together. And that's just, I talk about the Bible to secularists all the time, and they hate the Bible. They just can't stand it. They think it's just a bunch of mythology and all this. And just taking out that it's actually the spoken word of God, let's just take that absent. The fact the Bible even exists is miraculous. The fact that you have 66 independent pieces of literature that harmonize as beautifully as they do, just from a literary standpoint, is the most exceptional document ever created. Ever. And we don't talk about that enough, because it wasn't like they all just sat down in one reading and wrote Plato's Republic. Like, that's a pretty good piece of work. But you have 35 authors over 5,000 years, more or less, let's say 2,500 years, that independently write a document that is the perfect summation of the human experience. From creation to the end, to sin, to struggle, to chaos, disorder, disunity, salvation, to eternity. Wow. Is that not the journey of the human life right there? And it's completely harmonic, where you can just zoom in on one book and say, here's a whole book of how to apply your life to have meaning, the book of Proverbs, right? Here's a book of how to build civil society of government, which is Isaiah. That's where we get the idea of the executive, the legislative, and the judicial government. Here's a whole book of what's going to happen to you and how to endure it, right? Here's a whole book of how to build a church, my goodness. Here's a book of the end times. And it all kind of comes together and it fits so perfectly. And yet that's the book we decide not to teach our kids. That's the one book that is outlawed in most public schools. Think about that. So they teach the Quran, they teach white fragility, they teach the 1619 Project, right? But the book that survived, that's the most duplicated, the most influential, the most cited, the kind of one word, like kind of the one sentence phrases that we always tell people in the secular world, almost all of them come from the Bible. You treat others the way you want to be treated. Like, okay, that's not an original concept. Okay, go back to the source. The one book that has an answer to everything, how to marry, how to eat, what to do, where to go, all these things, how to speak, that's the book we decide to not put in. But there's a reason. It is the most duplicated, the most copied, the most inspirational book ever written. It's also the most banned, the most mocked, and the most burned book in human history. And it's a very important point, because, yes, there's always a threat of religion. There is, but there's something different about Christianity. We all know that. Christianity always gets more attention. It always gets more ridicule. It always gets more backlash. And it's because it's rooted in truth. It is the truth. And so, you know, young people, I get thousands of emails on my podcast a week, thousands. And I'm telling you right now, we have just ignored the mental health crisis in our country, the likes of which, I mean, the emails I get, I am so angry at our entire institutional systems that have failed young people, especially young men, the lack of meaning, the lack of direction. I continually pour into them to try to go back to the original text and sources. And so it's, in some ways it's intentional, but if we're not honest about addressing those kind of root causes, it's going to get very, very troubling. So we have that crisis of masculinity. We don't teach the Bible. And then it's even worse. We actually empower sociopathic people to then run our entire country. People that actually enjoy doing this, right? So if you enjoy being in permanent power, not exactly the type of person that I think should be there. That's kind of the idea the founding fathers first had is, let's have citizen government, right? You kind of serve a couple years and then you leave. If you actually enjoy the whole kind of ruling thing, there's something really wrong with that. Like, you shouldn't be in power. And that's exactly what has ended up happening, is people that actually get some sort of fulfillment through the exploitation of free people. And so, kind of to round all this and a couple more points here, the church, I think, is the only solution. Now, mind you, I say that intentionally. I believe Christians are the solution. But the church is the infrastructure of Christianity. Right now, the church, we're in it right now, it's not a physical place. It's ecclesia, it's the gathering of believers. But it's also the church that should be looked to make sense and order out of chaotic times. You think we live in chaos? Of course we live in chaos right now. We do. More so than ever before. And yet, I see some of these people that are kind of struggling. I read these columns, these meandering columns in the New York Times where they're like, I wonder why things are so chaotic right now. It's like, I don't know. You shut down every church for, 60 days and you wonder why people lose their minds. Like, yeah, it comes a lot more, it's a lot more tempting to go burn down Boston when you shut down the church. Like, of course it does. It's not the most difficult equation to be able to square. And so, and all of you in your own life, I think right now, we should be called in a couple different ways. And so we have a crisis in all those different things. The educational part of it, I'm a huge advocate of homeschooling. I've advocated for it for a long time. And I think anyone that homeschools should be elevated as heroes. We have to double the homeschooling population in the next 5 years. And I think that we should really embrace that. So, and we as, I look at some of these massive churches and I say, boy, if you guys just would have had a little bit smaller meeting space, and you would have just subsidized your congregation to have more people homeschooling, maybe you would have, a better culture around you. And so the education of our children is probably one of the most important places that we can all contest in, that we can get engaged in. Because if we allow this to play itself out, the civilization that we all love will come crumbling down. And that's something I find a lot, is that people, we have things so unbelievably good by historical terms that we actually don't think it can end, when actually it's inevitable that it will end. It's actually the fact that it exists that is the exception. And apathy, I mean, Thomas Jefferson said it best. He said, liberty breeds apathy. It's so true. When you're able to do what you want to do and pursue your faith and create wealth like us, it is actually incredibly predictable that we take it for granted and we don't contest for it. You know why? Because you have something to lose, right? Because then you actually have wealth and treasure and family and connections to lose. But if we're not willing to lose everything, then we will lose everything. That's kind of the message here, especially religious freedom. And I'm afraid for a day that I grow up in 30 years from now where the church will absolutely be criminalized, where people running for office have said that if a church does not perform same-sex marriages, they will lose their tax-exempt status. That is now a mainstream opinion of the far left in our country. And it's now metastasized. And if they don't do what they are told, they will shut them down. And we went through exactly why that is the case. And it's the pursuit of power is what this is all really about. I've done a lot of thinking about this. I've been kind of struggling with these people for quite some time. I've been kicked out of restaurants by them. I've gotten death threats from them. They've chased me around the country. Whatever you've seen, I've been through it. Okay. So I can't go on a college campus without at least 15 to 20 armed guards, right? Like all of it. And you hear my message today is exactly what I speak to kids. Like what I'm saying is considered to be hate speech on a college campus. I basically give the exact same speech, exactly in the same kind of tone, by the way. So. Just shows how weak we have created our young people. They can't even hear other ideas without wanting to run to the hills and smash windows. The extension of that is you have this generation that will soon, how the best way to word this, they won't exactly stop. Like that's the one thing I have to kind of communicate. People say, well, soon they're going to kind of burn out. Like that's never been the case. And so I want to close on this. I don't know how we're doing on time. We're doing okay? It's okay. So I can kind of sort of close. I can do a pastor's close, which is like four different closings, right? So there you go. Yeah, so the first thing is this, is that we have this wealth of experimentation of the 20th century. I think God can make good out of even horrific things. I really believe that. So we've actually been given a historical gift. If we just take a pause, because things happen so chaotically, we ask ourselves, what was God trying to teach us in the 20th century? So the 20th century was a bloodbath. It was the most murderous century in the history of humanity. One century. More people died than almost every century that preceded it by intentional death. What happened? And it wasn't just in Germany. Soviet Union, Mao's China, which I'll get to in a second, Southeast Asia, Cuba, Rhodesia. And we gloss over this. Young people, mostly in our school system, have no idea of 20th century history. I happen to be fascinated of the entire 20th century. I think that God was trying to really, we have an opportunity to learn from it. Now, what do I mean by that? Some people are like, what do you mean 20th century history? Okay, that's the 1900s. And it's a series of replicated and duplicated societal and governmental experiments that ended in well over 120 million people being murdered. And here's the succession that happened. And we can learn from it, or we can decide that we're better than it and just walk away from it, right? You get a civilization that is a little bit uneasy. Sound familiar? A little bit on edge, susceptible to lies and deceit and arrogance and bitterness. You destroy everything that came before you. You just say, whatever came before us is a mistake. Woo! Good luck with that. That's a common denominator. Eliminate the history. French Revolution tried doing this back in the 1780s. Robespierre, who led the French Revolution, when he took power, he was as bold to say, we have to eliminate time itself. And they did. They actually created the 10-week calendar. It's true. The French did. If you want, basically all the bad ideas we have right now come from France. Like, I'm just going to be honest. Like, they just specialize in societal destruction. And I like their food. They're really nice people. But my goodness, from Rousseau to Derrida to Foucault, it's like, this is my gosh. Very bitter people, right? So I have other French jokes, but I don't want to offend anyone. So they've invented two things, the white flag and the tourniquet. That's it. So like, I could keep going. So, anyway. So I could keep going. So totally kidding. So I mean, no offense to any French people out there. So the interesting, so to kind of to go to the 20th century, we have an opportunity to learn from it. So let's focus on one of the examples, right? You have Mao's China, Castro's Cuba, Mugabe's Rhodesia. You have Stalin's Russia. Let's focus on one. Let's focus on Mao, right? So we don't talk about this a lot. We're actually living through something that is a byproduct of Maoism, right? There are millions of people that have fled Mao's China here in America, or at least the generations of, praise God. But you want to talk about something that should be well known in every Western student's classroom. It's what happened in Mao's China. So Mao took power in the late 1940s after kind of the fallout of World War II. Japan controlled Manchuria, and Mao took power. It was a brutal conflict. In the 50s and 60s, he said he believed in Marxism, right? He implemented a lot of it. But then Mao did something that was very unprecedented. He did his own cultural revolution. So he wasn't pleased with just having power. He wasn't. He wanted to reprogram the minds of an entire civilization. So let's just put aside that Mao killed 60 million people, right? Let's just put that aside. Just think about how many people that is. That is like all of California, right? So like just eliminating California. Murdered. Done. Okay. So he employed something called the Red Guard that went around and would make sure that you had Mao's little red book. Right? They would make sure that you knew everything you needed to know to be obedient to Chairman Mao. And so they'd go around and they'd say, where's your little red book? And you know what the little red book was? The little red book was 267 different phrases of Chairman Mao. It was like their Bible. Right? No religion, no Christianity, no belief in God. Instead, they went around culturally revolutionizing people and indoctrinating them. If you didn't believe it, you got shot in the head. It was that simple. Because if there's no God, right and wrong is just an opinion, right? If you don't believe in God, morals is just like, whatever is best. And so for them, it's all about power. So Mao created one of the most oppressive, repressive regimes ever in the history of the planet. And the Chinese Communist Party is continuing the tradition of Mao. But what's so incredible is how few people actually know what has happened in China. And that's just one example. We can go to Castro's Cuba. And what, you know, the thing that pains me the most, I got to be honest with you, when I go speak down in Miami and I'm greeted by 70 and 80 year old Cubans that fled the Cuban Revolution, right? That fled Castro's Cuba. And they have tears in their eyes. And they're saying, I fled the gunfire. I barely made it out. And now my grandkid is trying to tell me how great socialism is. Think about that. So you have grandparents that almost died under this ideology, seeing their grandkids tell them that they're wrong. Whoa. And I could get into socialism and how people say, well, I'm a Christian Marxist. I'm like, no, you're not. You pick one or the other, okay? It violates 2 out of the 10 commandments. It's a belief in no private property. Human beings are good. Abolishing the church, abolishing, you know, what we know as decent society. So pick one, okay? You can't be both. Let's just be honest. You can't be a Christian Marxist. Like, no. And if you think you could be inherently contradictory, that's fine. Just don't pretend that you could express both. And so the 20th century could be a learning lesson for us. They try to group people on immutable characteristics, things you can't control, like skin color or race. We know that all throughout the 20th century. They promise utopia, even though they know they can never deliver it. They divide people at all costs. They assume power in times of crisis, always. Whenever there's a crisis, they try to get more power. Sound familiar? They attack and persecute the church. And so some people come at me and they say, Charlie, it'll never happen here. And I say, my goodness, that's one of the most foolish things I could possibly hear. What is the guarantee and the promise that tyranny can't come here? It's already here. I mean, we are locking pastors up in prison because they remain open and cannabis distributors can just stay wide open. And so the question is this. The Constitution allows for the framework for this, and here's where I'll close, is what are Christians going to do about it? That's the question. Now, if our answer is nothing, then okay. Then find a place that will be unaffected by this widespread tyranny and, you know, hope it doesn't come for you. I don't think that's the moral thing to do, actually. I think that's actually incredibly selfish, immoral, and against the Great Commission. I think the opposite is actually what you should do. Get right into the fight and defend the innocent. Get right into the fight and defend dialogue and speech. To defend the freedom of expression of all people. To actually get into those uncomfortable conversations and discussions and those political, you know, type of, let's just say, races or involvements, whatever it is, voting, engagement, knowing who stands for what. And people are like, well, politics, I don't like it. Well, it affects you whether you like it or not, okay? I mean, whether you think you can be above it, you're wrong. The most important thing you can do in your life is accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. The second thing is to make sure you can do the first, right? And now millions of people aren't able to do that. You know, I get messages from people, and I, praise God, my podcast has grown, of people that say, Charlie, I live in Michigan, and I love your podcast, and I've been dealing with some tough issues, and I need to go to a church, but I can't because they're all closed. What do I do? And I think to myself, those pastors that don't remain open in Michigan to communicate to that young man who wants to find Jesus, you are not spreading the gospel. You are pandering to earthly authority. You are disobeying the Great Commission because there are millions of young people. In a time like this, the church should be more open than ever before. Do you know that we have twice as many people that are addicted now to substances than before the shutdown? Suicide rates are up sometimes 400% in certain parts of the country. Marital abuse, spousal abuse, sexual violence. Every metric you have for a decaying society is up. Every single one. Cocaine usage. Oh, and I'm sure you guys know very well opioid addiction in this part of the country, which Washington, D.C. has decided isn't a top tier issue. They just have turned a blind eye to this part of the country. And it's just beyond irritating that they then come on their horse and they say, oh, you all have white privilege. Like, you want to go to an opioid clinic down the street and you tell me how much white privilege is in Maine? It just drives me absolutely off the wall. And I've seen the suffering that it's done to your communities. And it's completely colorblind. I can tell you that. The opioid crisis is completely colorblind. It affects all people of all sorts of backgrounds. And so that's the question we have to have is, are decent and reasonable people going to stand up? Are Christians going to stand up? What does standing up look like? Number one, get extremely micro, as micro as you can get. Find one person you know that is acting like a tyrant and stand up to them. One person. Find one person you know that is using their influence or power to exploit the innocent or the weak and find a way to stand up to them. How do you stand up to them? Dialogue. That's what Christ did. Dialogue is the way that God gave us to peaceably be able to express truth. What is dialogue? Get your words right. Look at them in the white of their eyes. Tell them confidently and compassionately like Christ did in front of the Pharisees and speak truth. That's what you do. That's hard. You know what's easier? It's easier to do a Facebook post than not look at the comments. It's easier. It's harder to go up to the tyrant and look at them in the eyes. It's harder to go up to the person who's doing the oppressing and say, what you're doing is wrong. And you know exactly who that is. Think in your own life. The person right now that is bullying, the person right now that is saying that you're not welcome in my home because of X, Y, Z, because of your ideology or belief or all this. And if you haven't found that person, you will. You will. Now, I'm not saying that you get nasty with them. That is not what I'm saying. In fact, the best thing you could do is actually show love to them, but be very clear with truth. And especially those that wish to suppress opposite opinion. Number two, what you can do, however seriously you take the education of your kids, double it. Because that is the most prized possession we have in our country right now is our young people. And they have gone, they are being propagandized, and they are victims of predator behavior from the secular humanists. They really are. Through every single mass media circuit, Hollywood, you name it, they are teaching things that are so malevolent and pernicious that some of you would be even amazed if you saw some of the stuff that is being taught to our kids. In fact, one of the unintended godly consequences of the shutdown is parents are actually seeing the garbage that their kids are learning all day long. I mean, I have gotten probably 50,000 different messages on social media of people that are like, I had no idea my kid was learning this stuff. I'm like, well, at least that's an unintended consequence of this stuff, right? And the last thing is this, and I don't love saying this, but everything you do should reflect your worldview. There's no place now that should be absent of what you believe, how you vote, what you do, everything. And I think every single Christian needs to vote. I'm not going to tell you how to vote here, but I think it should be pretty obvious that you should vote for the unborn, religious liberty, freedom of expression, and not turning our entire country into a Marxist wasteland. I think you can make your own decisions, right? So I know I'm getting the yank here, but look, I'm going to keep on fighting. I'm going to college campuses. I'm going to as many churches as I can. Why do I go to churches? I'm in Maine. I'm in Michigan next week speaking at a church. The church must become active, activist Christians for truth. If Christians rise up, you can save this republic. Ben Franklin said, if you can keep it. I believe the only way we keep it is with Christians standing boldly. You will be repudiated. You will be mocked. You will be ridiculed. That's why you have ecclesia, so you can have camaraderie with you guys and then go forth and then you gather again and then you go forth and then you gather again and then you go forth. You see, that's why we gather physically, right? That's why they want to get rid of that so you stop being bold, so you stop standing for true, for what is true and what is right and what is good in the world. As Paul said, whatsoever is true. And so when you get a little bit down, you come back on Sunday and you hear from Pastor Ken and you see your friends and then you go back and you fight and you contest again. That's what you do. And the last thing I'll say, final close, optimistic point. These people are actually cowards. These people are actually unable to deal with truth. They run away from it intentionally. These people need Jesus. You can deliver it to them. But Jesus is truth, logos. He didn't just say true things. He was truth. You say things that are true and you say truth, they cripple. They do not know how to deal with that. That's why they don't like dialogue, because they have nothing to say. That's why they want to shut you up, because they know they might actually have to hear something that is true, and their entire world that is built on a false idol might crumble. Stand for truth, fight more than ever before. It's a republic, if we can keep it. Thank you, guys.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. If you guys want to get a signed copy of my book, The MAGA Doctrine, type in Charlie Kirk Show, your podcast provider, hit subscribe, give us a 5-star review, screenshot it, email us, freedomandcharliekirk.com. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com, tpusa.com, and please consider supporting our program at charliekirk.com/support, charliekirk.com/support. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. God bless you. Talk to you soon. Thanks so much.